Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Hey, man, who's that cat coming down the street?
I don't know, but it sounds to me like that whipping man with the bone.
Sure having himself a ball.
Today on Route 51, the subject is March Madness and also the March to Equality. It's a sure sign of spring. Basketball fever is in the air. Even the president is filling out his brackets. And closer to home, in the Quant Fieldhouse, UW Stevens Point is hosting the NCAA Division III Women's Basketball Championship Final Four this weekend. And for women athletes, it's a very important year, the 40th anniversary of the Title IX gender equity law, which allowed women to compete on an equal playing field with men. We've got a very special guest today in our studio, Pat McKenzie-Lachaud. She's one of the very first women drafted to play in the Women's Professional Basketball League. Also the first woman to get a basketball scholarship to Illinois State University, where she would score 1,000 career points. And she's the author of Home Sweet Hardwood, a Title IX trailblazer, breaks barriers through basketball. Pat spent much of her childhood at Summit Lake near Antigo. Her grandfather coached Ronald Reagan. Pat McKenzie-Lachaud is in central Wisconsin this week, and she spoke Tuesday night as part of the UW Stevens Point Title IX Access to Opportunity Lecture Series. Now, the woman who introduced her is also with us today. The driving force behind that lecture series, UWSP history professor Nancy Lopatin Lummis. And joining us today, another special guest, Pat McKenzie-Lachaud's daughter, Natalie Lachaud, who was a star just a few years ago with the UW Stevens Point Pointers women's basketball team. Well, as always, we want to hear from you, particularly if you love basketball or if you or a friend or one of your children have been touched by Title IX. You can call in right now with your questions and comments at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. You can also post a question on the Route 51 Facebook page. I'm Glenn Moberg, and this is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Pat McKenzie-Lachaud, you spoke at UW Stevens Point Tuesday night. What was the most important part of your message?
I think it was twofold. One is that you never give up on your dreams, because when I started out, playing basketball really was just a dream, something that I could imagine. And the other thing is that you accept people who are different from you, because wherever I've gone, I've been a part of a team, but I've had to learn to get along with people from all different walks of life and different nationalities, different cultural backgrounds. And I think when you think about a young girl growing up, she's going to go through feelings of feeling isolated and left out and wondering what to do. And if she can accept that she's different and those differences will help her understand others, that's what it's really about. So never give up, and also believe in yourself when you feel like you're different.
And Nancy Lopatin Lummis, that was a message that you wanted the students at UW Stevens Point to hear Tuesday night.
I think so. I think that the entire Access to Opportunity series was, one, to connect our new general education program that we launched this year at the university, to introduce students to the ways in which academic topics are interconnected with every aspect of their life, including their passion for basketball, and that we wanted also to educate younger students who really have no idea that the world was different prior to Title IX for young women, whether they were in athletics or just students at the university.
Boy, it was really different, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a big weekend at UW Stevens Point.
Very
with the championships happening at the Quant Fieldhouse. Talk about that. Talk about what that means for UW Stevens Point.
Well, it's enormous, and it's a great testament to our head coach at UW Stevens Point, Shirley Egner, and I actually came to the university the same year. We've been there 25 years, and she has such a national reputation of being such a terrific coach and having such a quality program. I think it's a testament to her and our athletic director, Darren Montgomery, and the university that we have these teams that are, one's coming from the state of Washington, two from the East Coast, one from here in Wisconsin, Whitewater, and they're all on campus now. And they are doing, as we speak, I think, a community service with second and third grade girls, working with them on basketball, but also just being role models for young women. And it's great publicity for the university as a whole that we're interconnected in a national organization, but community activities as well.
And the semifinals are Friday evening, correct?
Friday at 5 and 7, and then the consolation game, I believe, is 5 o'clock Saturday, and the championship game is 7 o'clock Saturday.
Natalie Lachaud, this is a big weekend for you. You're back in town. You used to play with the Pointers, and Mom's here, too.
Yeah?
Yeah? are you pumped about these ball games happening at the Quant Fieldhouse where you played for so many years with the Pointers?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I used to follow the Pointers pretty closely, and I haven't had much of a chance to in the last few years just because of work. And so I'm excited to get to watch some women's basketball and to be back here in Point.
And what is work for you?
I'm a pediatric resident at the University of Minnesota. So I'm a doctor.
So you're a doctor. You did not decide to follow your mom's footsteps and try to make it in the grueling world of professional sports.
No, I knew pretty early that I was not good enough to play professional sports.
But still, Title IX was important for you personally because chances are you wouldn't have had a chance to play at UW-Stevens Point if that law hadn't been passed back in the early 70s.
Oh, absolutely. I also probably wouldn't have gotten the chance to go to medical school and become a doctor back in the 70s.
A lot has changed since then. And this law, the Title IX law, was actually signed into law in 1972 by a Republican president, Richard Nixon. Pat, it's been a big factor in your life. Without it, you wouldn't have gotten that scholarship to Iowa State University. Your home team in Sterling, Illinois, wouldn't have won the state championships,
right.
And you wouldn't have played professionally.
Absolutely. It opened doors for me, and those doors took me from Illinois State University, where I had the privilege to play for Jill Hutchinson, who was a legendary coach and did so much to promote women's basketball. And then I played in the professional league for the Washington, D.C. Metros. And when that fell apart, I flew overseas and became one of the first Americans to play in Europe for a premier team in Anier, which is a suburb of Paris. And from there, I went across the border to Marburg, Germany. And finally, now I'm still living abroad in Geneva, Switzerland.
You live in Switzerland,
mm-hmm,
with your husband,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
And he's a Frenchman.
Yes, yes.
So this is a homecoming for you. Natalie, did you grow up in Switzerland? Is that your background?
Yeah. I was born in Paris and lived in France till I was 10 and then Switzerland till I was 18 and then came to the States for college.
All right. Now, you've got an international reputation, Pat. Natalie could have gone to school anywhere. Why did she pick UW-Stevens Point?
Ah, that's a good story. When we were getting ready to look for universities, she'd always wanted to come back to the States because since she was a baby, she spent every summer in Wisconsin at Summit Lake, so this is like a second home for her. But when she was ready to choose a university, I called up my old college coach and asked her about programs, and Jill Hutchinson recommended UWSP because Shirley Egnor has a great program. So we put that on our list. We came to Stevens Point. We met Coach, and we fell in love with the place, and we knew she was a top-rate coach, and it was a great program, and that was that.
And Natalie, I take it you have no regrets.
None at all.
You're here wearing your UWSP Pointers T-shirt.
I would add, I was thinking about academics. I wanted to play basketball, but obviously I knew that I wasn't going to have a career in sports. And so the fact that Point has a good biology program was a big draw for me, too.
Now, Pat McKenzie Lachaud, you were a tomboy growing up, spending all your time on the basketball court while your friends were playing with Barbies.
Absolutely. So I was a total misfit. The girls thought I was crazy, and the boys, they were afraid of me. So I spent my childhood begging to get on the court. And luckily, my dad was a high school coach, so I'd follow him around, and he would open up the gym on Sundays and let me play. But what I had to do to find anybody to play, unlike today where they have girls have all their friends that are playing sports, they can go out and play a pickup game with them. I had to beg to get into the games with the boys. And, you know, I'd call out, I got next. And they'd say, girl, you can't play. And I go, they finally let me in. Somebody'd get injured. They finally let me in the game, and I'd put down a couple jumpers in their face. And they'd say, and I knew I'd made it when they said to me, okay, give me five, white girl. Can't jump, but you got game.
There you go. There you go. You must have felt like a freak, you know, back in the 50s and 60s when male and female gender roles were so arbitrarily defined and restrictive.
Oh, absolutely. I was the little misfit, but I had my family, unlike some families, my mom supported me, my dad truly supported me, and I have two sisters and they supported me. It was a hard time to grow up, but I never realized it until retrospect when I look back, because I always found people who would accept me as I was, and those people became my friends.
You were influenced a lot by your grandfather, Ralph McKenzie, something of a legend. He's a famous college basketball coach at Eureka College in Illinois, who was a big influence on a young student there, a guy named Ronald Reagan. Tell us about that and about the guy that everybody simply called Coach Mack.
Okay, it's just a great American story. My grandfather was the son of a tenant farmer out in Oklahoma, very poor. It's amazing that he even got a college education, but he once ran away because he didn't want to farm, and he ran all the way out to Illinois because he wanted to play football. His brother was out there. So he got a football scholarship and played football and became a real good athlete in all sports, and then he stayed on there and started coaching. But what was so interesting about his life was he did coach Ronald Reagan, and their relationship, this lifelong friendship that developed, is truly remarkable and an inspiration, I think, to anybody who coaches an athlete, because you should never, ever doubt the impact you have in a student athlete's life. When my grandfather was awarded a Timmy Award for his contribution to football, it was Ronald Reagan that presented the award. President Reagan invited him out to the White House, you know, for dinner. My grandfather was invited to the inauguration. I mean, here's my grandfather. He's just a small town guy who went on and had his relationship here with the President of the United States.
Well, Ronald Reagan was just a small town guy,
absolutely,
too, growing up in Dixon, Illinois, in less than prosperous conditions.
Right.
And he once said, this is a direct quote, Ronald Reagan once said, whatever I am today, I feel Coach Mack had an awful lot to do with it. That's your grandfather.
Right, and he said it on national TV, a Big Ten game. Yeah. So, yeah, he didn't ever pass up a chance to credit my grandfather.
You had a chance to meet Ronald Reagan, spend some time with him?
Right, I don't remember. I remember his horses. We went out to his ranch in California.
Just like a tomboy, huh?
Yeah, exactly. We went out to his ranch in California, and I can't remember much, except I thought those horses were beautiful and I'd love to get on one and ride. But I do know that any time that there was something special in my grandfather's life, even when he was a president, President Reagan would call up my grandfather, wish him happy birthday every year. When my grandfather had hip surgery, the White House doctors had to call the doctors in Peoria, Illinois, to tell the doctors, you know, make sure they're going to do that surgery correctly. So it's a really interesting story. It's a fascinating story, and it's a very touching story of the impact that coaches have in athletes' lives.
And both Ralph McKenzie, the coach, and your grandmother, Betty McKenzie, were teachers. Like your grandfather, you were an athlete, and also like them, you're now a teacher yourself.
Absolutely. In fact, my parents are teachers also in Sterling, Illinois, and my sisters are both teachers. So I come from a long line of educators, and it is so important in my family that every child has the opportunity to become educated. There are five different scholarships in my family name to help students get their college education. And I think I was raised with the philosophy of you pass it on. Somebody has helped you get where you are today, you give back. And if you have that kind of attitude, it's just amazing, because the world is there for you and you give back to the world, and it's just, you're happy.
Nancy Lopatin Lummis, that's the message you wanted to share with the students and with the community people.
Absolutely.
Of Stevens Point on
Absolutely.
Tuesday night.
I think it's very important, I mean, for a generation of people who were very well aware of how different it is now for their daughters or their granddaughters who are participating in sports and higher education, they understand what Title IX was and what it means. But for younger people who've never seemingly experienced a difference, they have youth athletics for both boys and girls, they need to know that it wasn't always this way and that there were people who paved the way for them, and they need to honor that through their play or through what they do in the future. And I think that's what Access to Opportunity was designed to show them, and connect it to this general broad-based education that they're going to get, whatever their major, as they come to the university.
You know, those roles were also very restrictive for men, too, but in another way. As a kid going to high school, at Fremd High School in Palatine, which eventually lost to your
Sterling,
school,
Sterling school,
Pat,
right?
At Sterling High School,
yeah, the
in
first
the championships.
For women. For girls' high school ball, yeah, they lost.
But I remember walking down the hallway and seeing the typing classes, and every chair was filled with women. Men wouldn't be seen dead typing. Now, everybody's got to type today.
That's
you
right.
know, it's a different world. But those sexual stereotypes and restrictions, women do certain things, men do certain things, never the twain shall meet, they're restrictive for both men and women.
Right. Oh, no doubt. When I was growing up, and I have a son who's a freshman at SPASH in Stevens Point, a daughter who's in seventh grade, they both have to take family and consumer science classes and tech ed classes. They cannot believe my stories of the full year of home economics that I was required to take that no boy ever took, where I had to learn how to sew an apron on a sewing machine, and I was graded on where my silverware were placed on the placemat for the cooking portion. They can't believe, my daughter particularly, who plays basketball, cannot believe that if I had wanted to participate in youth athletics, at that time, my parents probably would have had to go to court to get me to play on the boys' team, because there was no such thing as girls' youth athletics in Little League or basketball. That was unheard of.
And, Natalie, you owe an awful lot to your mom and the ladies who followed her.
Yeah, I certainly do.
You probably wouldn't be a doctor today if those changes hadn't taken place in the late 60s and early 70s.
No, I think back in the 70s, less than about 8% of physicians were women. And my graduating class at the U of M was about half and half. So it's a huge difference in 40 years.
It's a big change and a different world. But it's a world, Pat McKenzie, where you gained a lot of your spiritual values in a very old-fashioned place, Summit Lake in Langlade County in Antigo.
That's where I go to restore my soul. Yep, absolutely.
Spent a lot of your childhood there. We're going to talk about that when we come back. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking to Pat McKenzie Lachaud, a professional basketball player, a groundbreaking a Title IX pioneer, and the author of Home Sweet Hardwood. She's with us today. She's at UW Stevens Point for the NCAA championships this weekend, and she's also here in connection with a Title IX lecture series that's been created by another one of our guests, UW history professor Nancy Lopatin Lummis, and Pat's daughter, Natalie Lachaud, is with us. The only thing that's missing, dear listeners, is you. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on your Facebook, on our Facebook page, the Route 51 Facebook page, and we'll get it on the air. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Who, baby, ladies with game. 3-point shot, putting players ashamed. Crossover hesitation, peering the speed. Ooh, that girl done did it again. Swish. Ah, lady ballers gonna hype it this year. On the court, off the court, get respect, nothing less. Put your game to the test. Lady ballers working the game. Ladies with game, oh yeah. Ladies with game, oh yeah.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, presenting two magical exhibitions, From Houdini to Hugo, The Art of Brian Selznick, and historic lithographs and props from the American Museum of Magic, on view through April 6th. More at lywam.org.
You are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you just joined us, we have a very special guest with us, Pat McKenzie Lachaud, the author of Home Sweet Hardwood, a Title IX trailblazer, breaks barriers through basketball. She is one of the first professional basketball players in America, and she is also somebody who achieved a lot of her success thanks to the Title IX law, which was signed into law back in 1972 by Richard Nixon, allowing women to play basketball and other sports on an equal footing with men. Also with us, we've got Pat's daughter, a former Pointer basketball star, Natalie Lachaud. We've got UW-Stevens Point history professor, Nancy Lopaten-Lummis. This is also the weekend that the NCAA Division III Women's Basketball Championships take place on the UW-Stevens Point campus at the Quant Fieldhouse. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We want to hear from you if you love basketball, or if you or a friend or one of your children, maybe a daughter, has been touched by Title IX. You can call in right now with your questions and comments, or leave a post on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll try to get it on the air. Pat McKenzie, I want to talk about Summit Lake. Ralph McKenzie and Betty McKenzie, your grandparents, started a camp there in Langlade County near Antigo, and you spent your childhood summers there.
Right. It was a boys' camp again. So once again, I was the girl that wanted to play the boys' games, but they let me join in. And they own that. When they sold that boys' camp, they kept a piece of land, which I'm so grateful they did. And they built a cabin there. And now my family, which is spread across, well, of course, I'm in Europe, but my family that lives in the Midwest, spread apart, we meet up every summer for a reunion up at Summit Lake. And for me personally, I've lived by the Eiffel Tower, and I've lived by castles in Germany, and I'm now living by the Alps in Geneva. But nowhere it's more beautiful to me than this Summit Lake, Wisconsin.
You talk about the Northwoods in almost religious terms.
I'm religious about it. That's my religion.
Well, you gained a lot of your values there, and the spirituality, I think, that helped keep you grounded in professional sports.
I think that's absolutely true. That's every time I was having problems, I'd come back in the summer, and also injuries. I had a lot of injuries, and I'd come back in the summer to regroup, to restore my energy, and to nourish my spirit, and I'd get in that lake and swim, and
What are some of your favorite memories of Summit Lake?
Oh, Summit Lake. Well, one was going out for the bear hunt. You go out in the dark with just a flashlight that you weren't allowed to turn on, and you'd hope to scare up a bear. And, of course, if you're a kid, every noise, every rustle that you hear in the woods is, of course, a bear coming at you. So that's one of them. Another one was swimming to the island, because that was, you know, a big feat at that time to be able to swim to the island. Sitting around a campfire, telling stories, strumming the guitar, reminiscing, sharing the past family history.
Your grandfather and your family used to dress up as Indian warriors.
That was part of the camp routine. So that came from my grandmother, who she always wanted us to realize that we needed to value the Native American. And that was their land to begin with. So they had a ceremony in which they honored the Native American. And they did dress up as Indians and go into the woods and have a little powwow.
Now, Nancy Lopaten-Lummis, all of this is something that's really quite a focus at UW-Stevens Point. You've got a big focus on environmental education at the school through the College of Natural Resources. You also have a natural history museum located in the library, where you have a Menominee place names map and a real connection to the Native American traditions of northern Wisconsin.
We do. And again, whatever a student's major, prospective major, when they come to UWSP, they take a general education program, and our hope is that they will really embrace and gain something from the exposure to all these different things that they may never have had any kind of academic or any kind of exposure to before, and that it really adds to their intellectual and personal growth to be exposed to all different areas of education and different disciplines of education. And so there is a connection there, just as there's a connection to this lecture series to basketball.
And Natalie, did you pick up on your mother's love of northern Wisconsin, the lakes, the clean water, the woods, and so on?
Well, you know, I ended up here at UW-Stevens Point for college, so I guess you could say I did. Yeah, definitely. The cabin's been a really special place for us. I grew up in Europe, but I spent all my summers here in the States at our cabin, and it's my second home.
At that second home, Pat McKenzie, when you were a toddler, you were bitten by a rabid skunk. Bitten by a Rabid Skunk, which sounds like the title of a country and western song, but it really happened to you.
Oh, yeah. It's an incredible story, too. I thought I was a toddler at the time, and this is how the story goes. I'm not sure I remember it, but my brother and I were playing outside, and I thought it was a cat, so I tried to pet it, and it bit my hand, and I started screaming, and my brother called my grandma, who realized that I had been bitten by a skunk. So she went flying into the cabin to try to get help. We didn't have a telephone there, so they ran to the grocery store in Summit Lake.
And this was back in the 50s.
This is the 50s, yeah. They ran to the grocery store and tried to, no one knew what to do. They called the hospital in Antigo. They weren't sure. And so finally they told them to call the state health department. And they said, well, you got to catch that skunk because it could be rabid. So then there was a big skunk chase back at the camp, where it got in the lodge, and they ran through the lodge and ended up throwing a bucket over it and shooting it, because you had to chop off the skunk's head, send it to the State Department, and they found out, yes, it was rabid. So as a 18-month-old, I had to have the serum or the anti-vaccine to prevent getting the rabies.
And very painful shots.
Absolutely, extremely painful. And I think to this day, this is why I have hospital phobia, and I'm afraid of doctors because of the man in the white coat coming at me with that big long needle. And it makes it very ironical that my daughter would go on to become a doctor, because I have such a fear of doctors. Not so much now, but I do hate being in the hospital.
Well, you've spent a lot of time in the hospital, and there are a few things that really stand out in your book, Home Sweet Hardwood. The importance of Title IX, overcoming adversity, your personal battle against racist and sexual stereotypes,
right,
in your professional,
absolutely,
career. But the thing that really stood out for me is your high tolerance to pain. Playing with a herniated disc, playing with strep throat and mononucleosis, overcoming a serious bicycle and car accident later in life. What gave you the strength to overcome the kind of pain that would keep many people bedridden, and with you, you just sucked it up and ran out on the basketball court?
Well, I was Coach Mack's granddaughter. He was a pretty tough, gruff guy. No, I think I was trained as an athlete to put up with pain, and you just get on with it because you got the next game coming up, and you do everything you can to keep yourself prepared to play. And like a lot of athletes, I pushed myself probably beyond what was good for me. But if I had to do it over, and if you look at the football, you know, pro football players, pro basketball players, they go through umpteen surgeries just to get back on the court. And I think for whatever reason, I was born with a drive. And that drive was, fortunately, I was able to express that on the basketball court. But once the basketball was gone, when I could no longer play, and I did have to fight to be able to walk again, I think that's that drive that kept me going, that drive, that faith that I would one day be better, and the strength of my family. I mean, I can't express enough how much that's what it's about, is the family that's around you that helps you through those tough times. And now, even today, I have pain. I mean, it was a pain to get on that plane and fly 9 hours over here, but I was going to do it because the message is so important. And I get up to go to school. I'm still teaching, and I do that because my kids, they make me laugh, and they take away the pain. I mean, I'm coaching today because when I'm coaching and I'm on that court,
the pain goes away.
Yeah, coaching in Switzerland.
Yes.
Yeah. Natalie, your mom must be such an inspiration to you.
Yes, she really is. I mean, it was challenging, you know, coming to the United States and being so far away from my family when I was in college. But compared to what she had to do, you know, I came here, I spoke the language, I did have some family here. She moved abroad when she was, what, 24?
23.
Yeah, and she went to France. She didn't speak any French, and there we didn't have Facebook and email and all of that. You couldn't make cheap phone calls. So she'd hear from her family maybe every 2 weeks, and it was a letter. And you know, so whenever I was struggling, I would just think back, and I'm like, well, what I'm dealing with, it's nothing compared to what she's been through.
And Nancy, that personal story is part of the inspirational story that you wanted to share in Stephen's Point.
I think it makes it very real to students in the community. When I started working on the series to dovetail with the general education program, I found Pat's blog and I found her story first, and I built backwards from there to make those academic subjects of how did we get Title IX? What does the law say? What is the social impact on women since then and the psychological impact? I knew the one that the students and the community would be most drawn to, the two personal stories from the series, Pat's, but also Shirley Egner. She was part of the series talking about growing up and being a player and being a high school coach and a college coach and seeing that whole transition. And so the two personal stories make it very real to people who don't otherwise understand what Title IX did for society as a whole.
We're talking about March Madness and the March to Equality on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Nancy Lopatin-Lummis, who is a professor of history at UW-Stevens Point. Also, Pat McKenzie-Lachaux, one of the first women's professional basketball players in America who later played internationally, author of Home Sweet Hardwood. And we have Pat's daughter, Natalie, with us, who was a star with the UW-Stevens Point Pointers, the NCAA Division III Women's Championship games this weekend at UW-Stevens Point. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way to dribble up and down the court. Just like I'm the king on the microphone. So it's Dr. J and Moses Malone. I like slam dunks and taking it to the hoop. My favorite play is the alley. Ooh, I like the pick and roll. I like the give and go. Cause it's basketball. But Mr. Curtis Blow.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership, bringing their 36th annual statewide convention back to Stevens Point April 24th through 26th, with hands-on workshops, national experts, and ideas for protecting our legacy of lakes. More at WisconsinLakes.org.
Our guest for about the next 18 minutes on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, Pat McKenzie-Lachaux, professional basketball player, author of Home Sweet Hardwood, a Title IX trailblazer, breaks barriers through basketball. Also her daughter, former Pointer basketball star Natalie Lachaux, and UW-Stevens Point history professor Nancy Lopatin-Lummis. I'm Glenn Moberg. We are celebrating basketball fever, March Madness, and also the March to Equality as we talk about the Title IX program and what women had to do in order to play on an equal playing field with men at the high school level, at the college level, and professionally. Let's go back to Sterling High School, Pat McKenzie-Lachaux, and talk about a coach that you had there, a guy named Phil, who broke many of the stereotypes himself. Phil was a black man.
Right.
And
yep.
I mention that because you talk about racism a lot in your book and
right.
how the two of you, for instance, weren't served when you sat together at a Denny's.
Right.
And about the racial segregation and the mistrust between whites and blacks that you encountered later at Illinois State University. So you weren't just battling sexism, you were battling racism.
Right. And I think that's part of my story. And one of the themes underlying through the whole book is that It's no fun being discriminated against. It's really difficult. And I was fortunate to have the friendship with Phil Smith, who was the first African-American coach in the conference. And actually, my dad taught me the fundamentals, but Phil took me to the next level because he could actually get out there and play one-on-one with me. And at that time period in U.S. history, we were still reeling from the civil rights, and things were not equal at all. That separate but equal had been outlawed, but it was still, you know, there was still a lot of harsh feelings. And what was so great about Sterling, Illinois, is we lived in a bit of a little bubble, and basketball brought that community together because there were blacks on the team, there were Hispanics, and there were whites. And just the fact that they merged together and won that first state championship, first ever for a high school girls basketball, that just brought the whole community together.
Now, that actually happened a couple of years after you left high school.
Yeah, that was 1977.
And that
was my little sister, Karen, who played on the team.
Really?
And my dad, who was coaching, so yes. They played at Illinois State University, and it was my college coach, Jill Hutchinson, who organized the tournament. So there's a lot of connections.
So that team, the Sterling team, had to beat Fenger, which is a City of Chicago powerhouse team. And then you beat my alma mater, Fremd High School from Palatine, Illinois. And the championship, you write, changed a lot of conservative attitudes about the proper roles of women in sports and in life in Sterling, Illinois.
I think it did, yeah. I think they started to recognize it. Wow, these girls can play. And that from that time, I think Sterling was ahead of its time because the right people there were willing to push for the women's sport. There was an athletic director there that made sure that the girls got their opportunity. And so just the fact that they had coaching and they had the space available to them to practice, that led to them to become successful.
Now, how serious of a problem do you think racism still is in America? How much progress do you think we've made?
Well, I have not lived here for 35 years, so it might be difficult for me to judge. I think that I think it still probably exists. In some areas, it's probably worse than other areas. And I just know that I have been blessed in my life to have had the opportunity to play beside African-American teammates, teammates that were homosexual, teammates that were French, teammates that were German, and teammates from all different economic levels. And the fact that when you are on a team together, you don't look anymore at this person's white, this person's black, this person's French, this person's German. You look at them as individuals, and those people are your teammates, and you got their back. And when you are in a situation like that, where you're working together for a common goal, and especially in the pros, when we didn't have any money. I mean, we were hitchhiking to practice because we had no money for food.
Even at the professional
even
level.
Even at the professional level, especially at the professional level. I mean, because I was playing with a lot of inner city blacks and who had an idea of whites, and they didn't have the idea that I had of them because I had Phil and other friends who were black. So there was a lot of animosity on the team. But because we were starving, basically, we would throw together whatever we had in our cupboards to make a meal. And we would help each other out. And I think if we could just throw the whole world into a team like that, where you were really dependent on each other, we would get rid of all this problem of racism and discrimination.
Well, maybe we all need to be on the same team, and maybe that's part of the problem.
Absolutely.
Be on the same team politically, philosophically, in terms of our spiritual attitudes, in terms of our love of country and love of the world.
Absolutely. And then as far as having lived overseas for so long, I have to be a diplomat over there because, you know, not everybody loves America or our political philosophy or what we're doing over, you know, over here. We're the big, great country that everybody loves to hate. You know, they see us as being the best of everything, but they also criticize us.
I'm going to jump off of that because you write about hanging out with people in Germany when you were playing professionally there with leftist political leanings who would make fun of our president at the time, Ronald Reagan, and you were afraid to tell him that he's a personal friend of your family.
Yeah, absolutely. They go, Ray Gunn, and point a gun at me. And, you know, when I tell, they ask where I was from, and, okay, nobody heard of Sterling, so I'd say Chicago, and Al Capone, you know, that's all they knew about Chicago. So I felt like every step of my life, wherever I went, I had to break down stereotypes and try to show America on its best side. And I think because people did love me as a teammate or a part of the community over there where I was living, even in my international school today, where I have students from 184 different countries, I think I try to represent the best of America. And I think the best of America is right here. The small town feeling that you get from Stevens Point, that you get from Wausau, that you get from Wisconsin. I mean, this is what I'm carrying abroad, around the world. And this is what I try to promote in my blog that, you know, people are following from around the world.
Nancy LePayton Lummis, I just want you to react to what Pat McKenzie LeShoe just said.
What a great advertisement for our general education program where we try and expose our students who may be coming from small towns with small education budgets that don't have a lot of opportunity to study a curriculum that looks at the rest of the world, and to introduce them to the fact that we are more the same than we are different, and to get a better appreciation and understanding of global issues and different people in the United States, and to help everybody realize they can maintain the very best of, as Pat says, the small town, you know, understanding of who they are and what it means to be American, but also appreciate the differences around the world and be the best of ambassadors of our country and of our way of life to the world, and to appreciate difference.
Now, Natalie LeShoe, you grew up with your mom in France and Switzerland. Are there a lot of stereotypes still about America, and is that something you've had to encounter?
Yeah, there certainly is. And I went to the international school where my mom teaches, and it's a melting pot of a bunch of different nationalities, and most people are bicultural. But there's still a lot of that, like people associate U.S. foreign policy with American people, and they're like, you're responsible for, you know, the U.S. going to Iraq or whatever is going on at the time, which is clearly not true. And so I think it's in the same sense that, you know, people from a small town in Wisconsin might need to be exposed to somebody from another culture to be able to learn tolerance, kind of the same way for these people who are very worldly and are still blaming, you know, the individual American citizen for things that are really out of their control.
And if you just joined us, we are talking to Pat McKenzie LeShoe, a Title IX trailblazer, one of the first professional basketball players, women's basketball players in America, the author of Home Sweet Hardwood. We're talking to her daughter, Natalie LeShoe, who is back in town in part for the NCAA Women's Division III championships taking place in Stevens Point this weekend. We're talking to the woman who helped bring the two of them to town, Nancy LePayton Lummis, a UW Stevens Point history professor. 1-800-780-9742. If you would like to get a comment in, we'll try to squeeze it on the air. And we have a comment from Kim, who left a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, saying Title IX may have changed some things, but don't kid yourself that women's sports are equal to men's. Not even close. We still have a long way to go. And I'm going to go to Natalie first, because you're the one who's shaking your head in agreement right now with a big smile on your face.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. It's pretty, when knowing my mom's background, I can say, wow, we've really come a long way. But I also know that I've had people make comments to me as a female athlete that they would never make to a male athlete. You know, I hear guys all the time tell me that they're not interested in watching women's college ball or the WNBA because women can't play ball. I also see it in the medical field. You know, none of my male colleagues ever get confused for being a nurse. And I don't think my male colleagues will have patients tell them, no, I want to talk to the male doctor, which has happened to me. So, you know, sexism is still out there. We've come a long way, but we've still got a ways to go.
And Pat McKenzie LeShoe, you not only had to deal with sexism and racism, as you just mentioned, you had to deal with homophobia. You had warnings about a fellow player who was a lesbian,
right,
from some of the women who,
right,
were on your team at the time, people who thought that probably you were gay because you were a woman athlete.
I'm sure that was what people thought. That was the stereotype back then. If you played sports, you were gay. But now I'm hoping that it's not true, that they don't feel that way, because So what? So what if you're gay and you play sports? Big deal. I mean, that you can still be a great athlete. It has nothing to do with it. So I'm hoping that those kind of issues have gone by the wayside, because that seems to, like, the dark ages to me now.
In your professional career, you also had a coach at one point who demanded sexual favors from some of the women on the team.
Ooh,
talk about that.
You did read that book closely. Yes, because I think, you know, going back to the old stereotype and the gender roles, we were still seen as sexual objects. In fact, in the WBL, the names that they picked and the logo that they picked for the teams were playing on the femininity. Like, one of them was the Milwaukee Does, and it had a doe that looked like a deer, but it had a tail like a Playboy bunny. So I think they thought the only way that they would get spectators was to play us off as, you know, sex objects.
And the Chicago team, that was what, the Chicago?
Chicago Hustle.
Chicago mm-hmm. Hustle, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And even at the high school level, the Sterling team was the Golden Girls, right?
Oh, yeah, no, that, we're a bit embarrassed of that. It worked back then, but it wouldn't work any longer today, no.
When you went to Illinois State University, you write that you encountered a lot of animosity from some of the African-American women that you ran into at the school, which you found it difficult to deal with because, again, your coach was an African-American man, and you played alongside black athletes in Sterling.
Right. But I think they had not been exposed to the situation that I'd been exposed to. I'm sure if you grow up in the inner city Chicago, you are not going to have the same opportunities as the white kid that's out in the suburbs. And I'm sure that they felt a lot of anger and frustration at the white population. So I understood why there was this distance between us. But coming from little old Sterling, where everybody got along, I was a bit shocked by it, and I wanted to be friends with everybody. And luckily, in the situation, in it being in a team again, we could be friends.
When you moved to France, you write that you were surprised at the tolerant attitudes of the French toward race, even their willingness to accept biracial couples.
Yes, and I think part of that came from the World War II, because we came over there and helped free France. And when they were occupied by Germany, and from that time, the American soldier was seen as a hero. So they had a lot of black soldiers then, and they became the heroes. And also, the African-American men were professional basketball players, and they came over there. And the French basketball clubs, teams, were so happy to have the Americans over there that they kind of became heroes.
Well, you know, in another field, too, they love American jazz in France.
And absolutely, yeah. That's
Louis
the other
Armstrong
thing. Yeah.
Back in the 50s.
Yeah, they did a lot to promote that, yeah.
When you were in France, some good things and bad things happened to you. You met your husband.
Right.
And you also had two serious accidents, though, one in France when you were riding a bicycle mm-hmm. and then one in Germany in a Volkswagen, mm-hmm. accidents that eventually ended your career. Mm-hmm. Just talk briefly about that.
Well, the first one, I fell off a bike. It was in Germany. I fell off a bike and flipped and landed on my head. And they told me it wasn't serious, so I just kept on. They said I could play sports, that I wasn't using my hands, so I was playing soccer. And I came back to the States, and they realized how bad the damage was because it was a severe whiplash. And so I had pinched the nerve into my hand where I couldn't really write with my right hand. However, because I was driven as an athlete, I continued to play. And
continued to play even in that pain.
Continued to play and had such a good shooting form that the basket
and then
still
finally
going.
You had the accident in the Volkswagen that ended your career.
Right, that ended
how
my career.
How difficult was that to you to know that you were never going to play again?
It was devastating, and part of the devastation was being 4,000 miles away from home in a hospital where you weren't quite clear what the doctor was saying because it was all being spoken in French, and having no support system over there. So luckily, my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, was there, and he helped me get through that crisis. And when I got to Paris, then I lived in Paris and went to rehabilitation, and just step by step, tried to recover. And it was another African American who got me my first coaching job in Paris. And once I got into coaching, that helped ease the pain of not being able to play because I was able to pass on my love of the game to those younger players.
Pat McKenzie Lachaud, you're helping a lot of people with your story, helping a lot of people.
Thank you. That's
and easing the pain of a lot of people.
Oh, I hope so.
We're out of time. I want to thank all three of our guests so much for being here. Pat McKenzie Lachaud, the author of Home Sweet Hardwood, a Title IX trailblazer, breaks barriers through basketball. Also, former Pointer basketball star and her daughter, Natalie Lachaud, and UW Stevens Point history professor, Nancy Lopaten Lummis. You can find out more about the Title IX lecture series on the UW Stevens Point website, uwsp.edu. And a reminder, UW Stevens Point is hosting the NCAA Division III Women's Basketball Championships this weekend in the Quant Fieldhouse. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Brother Bones and the Harlem Globetrotters, Sonia Henderson, Curtis Blow, and Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli. Remember to follow us on Facebook, and if you missed some of this broadcast, we'll repeat it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.